filling in with Mitch Fortner. You're on your Friday. K-State baseball coming up tonight, 6:30. So we'll start pregame at 6, live from Toyton Family Stadium. And that'll take you into your night and what's a very busy weekend with the Final Four going on. Opening day on Monday. You got a lot of things to fit into your sports calendar over the weekend. Plus, my highlight of the weekend, WrestleMania. For a second, I almost went giant Vince McMahon screaming on it, and I decided to... I thought better of it, Mitch.
I'd have to turn down your microphone.
I held back just a little bit. So, it's an interesting Final Four. Storylines are thick for K-State fans because you've got not one but two former K-State coaches in the Final Four. Dana Altman coaching the Oregon Ducks, and of course Frank Martin coaching South Carolina. So it is it's going to be an underlying storyline. 100% is going to be that way. So especially when you got, you know, K-State's been jonesing to get to the Final Four for a long time. You got two guys that were here that are now in the Final Four, potentially a national championship matchup, if you can even try to wrap your head around that one. But it's been a topic and a point of contention for the last week, ever since we got clear last weekend.
Yeah, when we found out Frank was going to be in it, I think some of us were excited, some of us were sad, I think, but we're all pulling for Frank.
Yeah.
And when Oregon got in, I think some of us were like, hey, good for Dana Altman. The others were like, well, there goes KU in my bracket. Oh, Dana Altman's with Oregon? Like,
right. I was happy to see Dana beat KU again. And he called him the Chicken Hawks in a press conference. So, I mean, come on. That doesn't get a whole lot more K-State than that. That's a super high five to Dana Altman. So that was some bird-on-bird violence there in that game. I was saving that one all week, Mitch. Thanks for that.
Good one.
So here's the not bad. So here's what we're looking at, okay? So you're going to have a couple different interesting matchups for those Final Four games, but that's going to be the underlying theme for K-State fans is the Frank Martin and Dana Altman stories. So where does that match up? Where do you fall on? Are you cheering for? Are you cheering against? Are you still your feelings hurt? I'm with you. I think that I'm fine with being a K-State fan and still cheering for both of those guys. I don't have any problem at all wishing Frank Martin well. I don't have any problem at all wishing Dana Altman well. And I think that that's probably how I'll watch those games all weekend.
It's kind of like when the Cats are in, like somebody in the NFL is playing for a Super Bowl or playing for some big game. I don't really care who the team is. I'm just rooting for that guy, that Wildcat, or that person that once was a Wildcat. Rooting for the best for them.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So I think, though, John and Cole had a very animated discussion earlier in the week. And they're...
They got their feelings out there.
Yeah, they did put out all the feels. I think that that's a good way to put it. They got all the feels out on the air earlier this week. So I think that we could play that one back, and I think that they're ready to have the animated discussion that Mitch and I probably aren't going to. We could have that discussion about WrestleMania maybe after the show, though. Fair enough?
Fine.
All right. Well, here's John and Cole talking about Frank.
Cole Manbeck talking with me here. One of the things I was trying to hit on really in my monologue that I put together with all this stuff, which – by the way, I'm telling you, man, if you listen to that, that's seriously like my life's manifesto. That's 5 years worth of emotion pouring out. And one of the things that's the most frustrating to me is I think when you talk to someone who might push back on what your and I's stance is on Frank Martin Cole, it would be, well, he was a little bit out of control sometimes here in Manhattan. I again think that gets overblown, but I will grant you that he was not infallible, and you don't want to necessarily be slapping guys on the wrist like with Chris Merriweather or some of the language could have been toned down when it's actually in a game in public. I get that. But the problem was there was no baseline of respect between him and his boss, and he's not going to listen to somebody that he doesn't respect. I mean, in some ways, I would think that almost makes you push back and, you know, bear down into the trenches with your ways even more. So there was no chance of that happening, and he has multiple times praised Ray Tanner at South Carolina, the AD there, about the job he's done and just working together. My take on it is, you know, it should be, hey, let's work together to rein this in from you and move forward from there. Why couldn't that happen, and is that, do you think, a fair assessment?
Well, I think that's exactly what happened. I think John Curry approached Frank Martin completely the wrong way when it came to toning down the way that he was courtside and, you know, during games. And so, you know, like you, if someone comes to me that I don't respect and they, you know, tell me to do something, I'm a lot less likely to listen to them than someone that I really do respect that gives me an honest opinion, a critique about myself. You know, if one of my best friends that knows me really well comes and says, hey, you know, you're wrong here, I'm a lot more likely to listen to that than I am from someone who treats me, you know, the wrong way, and I don't have that respect level with them. And so, yeah, you know what? Frank Martin did need to tone it down a little bit. He's obviously done that at South Carolina. I myself never thought it was a huge problem. And, you know, here's the reason why. This is what I always will tell to people who are, you know, so critical of, you know, the tough love and the language and the yelling and screaming is, you know what? I don't get that because Frank Martin's real. And would you rather have a coach that's fake and shows you in front of the cameras who he isn't? Because you get that a lot in collegiate sports and coaching across the entire country. When you have a coach that's in front of the TV cameras that plays it cool and acts all calm, but then behind closed doors is a different animal, you know, in practice. You know, Frank Martin was the same in practice as he was in front of the TV cameras during games. And I had a respect for that because he showed who he truly was. And that's the thing, one of the things he always told me is, you know, he didn't want to hide who he really was when the cameras were rolling. And so I respected that. And, you know, I guess I'm a bit surprised that some of the older generation, I've talked to people in the older generation that, you know, were critical and couldn't stand the way Frank Martin yelled and screamed. And I'm just thinking, gosh, I mean, guys that played football in the 70s and played basketball and sports, I mean, I've heard stories about how hard their coaches were on them. You would have thought the tough love approach would have gotten more respect with that older generation nowadays and, you know, would have enjoyed what Frank brought to the table. But, you know, I've heard plenty of criticism. I just never got it. I mean, it didn't bother me. And I thought what he did is he brought a national brand to K-State and a reputation and an identity to K-State that has not been replaced since.
Well, I love that you bring that up because, you know, I mean, a lot of these people, and I'm generalizing here, I realize that, but there's a sentiment out there that, like our generation, millennials, we're too soft, right? We need to be toughened up. We need some tough love. Frank Martin was all about that tough love. I think there's a lot of hypocrisy that goes in the way that people think about that. And you know, the other point that I would make here just about respect, because I probably should have prefaced the respect level conversation with this, I think Frank didn't have as much respect for John Curry because of, like what you were saying, some of the tactics that were going on there in terms of how he was trying to get this to happen. Like, for instance, if my boss came in and sat in this studio that I'm in right now and just sat in the corner and took notes every day that I was doing the show, just not saying anything, sitting there writing down notes, yeah, I'd probably be looking for a new gig too. You know, that's not the way that people want to be treated. And think about whatever the example is. For anybody out there, if you're at your office, you're doing whatever, if you had your boss just sitting directly behind you taking notes, that's not something that I think anyone would really be a fan of.
Well, what it shows is a lack of trust. And, you know, it's definitely not the way to go about it. And micromanaging, you know, I've dealt with micromanagers before in my career. And if you have someone that micromanages you, it's an awful feeling because that feels like they don't trust you to do your job. And I've worked with great managers and leadership and bosses who don't micromanage, trust you to get it done. And it's so much better. And that's the right way to lead. And, you know, John Curry micromanaged Frank Martin. There's really no other way to put it. You know, he meddled in Frank Martin's business. He did it to other coaches. He damaged relationships there. You know, he just went about it entirely the wrong way. And as a result, you know, Frank Martin started looking for other jobs. And I always laugh at the comment that Frank Martin wasn't a lifer and he was looking to leave K-State all along. And you know what? Maybe he would be gone by now if he was, you know, had a few more successful years. But like you had stated in your podcast yesterday, you know, he's an extremely loyal guy. And he had respect and admiration and loyalty to K-State for giving him his first opportunity as a head coach. I know he loved Manhattan. His wife loved Manhattan. You know, they have good friends here. They still love Manhattan.
They still come back, by the way, you know, kind of in the dark of night. But Frank Martin comes back to Manhattan. Like, the guy still loves it enough to come back.
Yeah, I mean, he would not. I honestly don't think he would have been out there looking for jobs. You know, the Miami job gets referenced the year before he left. I don't think he's out there campaigning publicly unless his, you know, John Curry made his life so miserable that he needed to do so. And in a way, I felt like, you know, when he was doing that, he was sending a message, you know, by going public and making public statements about that Miami job, sending a message that, you know what, I'm serious about this. I want word to get out at this point of what's going on. And, you know, it's an unfortunate situation because we talk about the brand. It is hard these last couple weeks to see Frank Martin. I cannot turn on a sports TV station or even ABC and not see Frank Martin on my TV, or get on Twitter and not see a story written about Frank Martin from a national publication raving about him. He has a reputation among national media. They love him. They should, because he's real with them. He doesn't just give you the typical coach speak. And I think that's, you know, something that we certainly miss here at Kansas State when it comes to that, you know, charming personality that Frank Martin does have, and the ability to relate, speak about different issues, even outside of basketball. I mean, I think Frank Martin is tremendous with the media, and, you know, it's a shame that he's still not here at K-State, and K-State's enjoying the success that he brought to the table.
Yeah, I mean, I'll close with this. We probably should wrap it up. I mean, I feel like you and I, obviously, as people know out there, I mean, we could go on for this with this forever, but the other aspect of this that I think is why guys like you and me feel so passionate about it, one, you know, if you're under the age of 30, I'm trying to do the math in my head here, 30-ish, I mean, he's the only basketball success that you really know in your lifetime. So there is going to be an attachment there because it's the first love, you know, it's the first thing that you experienced. I think that is, you know, just a hard thing to get beyond as far as Frank Martin is concerned with so many people here. And as far as the branding goes, not only did he give you a brand, he gave you just all the fun stuff that even with all the winning Bill Snyder does, you don't get all the thrills and frills and everything that come with the winning necessarily, because it's just not who Bill Snyder is. And that's not a knock. That's not a criticism. It's just a fact. And so you had some of that fun that a lot of teams and a lot of programs get when they're winning programs. You had it all with Frank.
Yeah, a couple things there. So I was born in 1986, and really the highlight of my K-State basketball fandom as a child was going to the NIT games when Askew Jones, you know, hit 62 points and hit all those threes. I mean, that was one of the highlights of my childhood, which was a great moment, but there were 5,500, 6,000 people in the arena. And that kind of tells you what K-State basketball was like for me growing up. And I got to the point where I never thought that K-State would beat KU at home, going year after year, you know, starting to think, gosh, is this ever going to happen? You know, is K-State ever going to be truly competitive and good in basketball consistently, thinking that might not ever happen? And then Bob Huggins arrives, changes the culture, and then Frank Martin takes it a step farther. And really, I thought, rejuvenated fan base, and he brought the fans together, and it was fun. It was fun to watch Bramlage Coliseum start to be packed every night, and the fans to be so loud, and then obviously the Octagon of Doom trademark all started when Frank Martin got here, and how this was such a tough place to play, and then they beat KU, and they, you know, got to the Elite Eight and tasted NCAA tournament success that had never really been experienced by you or I as fans before. And so, yeah, he's the guy that rejuvenated K-State basketball for our generation. We didn't get to see the 80s and 70s, you know, 60s and 50s when K-State was consistently one of the better programs in the country. And so that's why I think our generation struggles with this more, and the loss of Frank Martin, because we didn't have that success. And then it felt like it was such short-lived because he was gone, you know, after 5 years, and it felt like he could have been a guy that possibly gave you 10 to 15 years of that success. And then the other thing is the identity of the program. And you knew game in and game out, K-State was going to lay it all on the line and get after it. They were going to play defense. They were going to get on the floor for loose balls. They were going to rebound. You know, they had a mentality about them that they don't have now. You never know what you're going to get from K-State going game in and game out right now these last few years. And I think that's the unfortunate thing. I think that's one of the failures that Bruce Weber has had. He has not been able to establish a culture or identity for his team. And that's been one of the big issues and something Frank Martin's extremely good at.
That was John and Cole from earlier this week on The Game as they talk about Frank Martin. Of course, he's got his Final Four game tomorrow. So it's been a hot topic, man, all week long amongst K-State fans. Just a forward-moving dude. So we'll just move forward, right? Into segment number two for the second hour. Royals starting day lineup. Are you ready for opening day? I cannot wait for some Royals baseball. That will be on the way. on Monday. We'll get a sneak peek at the opening day lineup coming up next here on The Game.